Coming up, as the Brooklyn Nets continue their playoff push, we take a look at the statistics and how they should be building the best possible lineup. How deep should they go with their lineup, both in the regular season and pushing towards those playoff games? We break it all down next from Yuta Watanabe to Edmund Sumner, Cam Thomas, and everyone in between.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Brooklyn, yo. Yes, my friends, it is the Locked On Nets podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. I'm Adam Armbrecht, breaking down not only the Brooklyn Nets, but also the New York Giants on the One Giant podcast and your New Jersey Devils on the Devils Puck Luck podcast. We thank you for making us your first listen of the day. We're free on all those great platforms. And let you know, today's episode is brought to you by the Ultimate Basketball GM. If you've ever dreamt of becoming an NBA GM and managing your basketball franchise, then this is the game for you. To download the game, just visit ultimatebasketballgm.com or look it up in the app stores. Our listeners get a 100% free boost to their franchise when using promo code all caps locked on. Get in the game now. And where we get into the game, my friends, as we said at the top, taking a look at what the best version of this Brooklyn Nets team should be for Jacques Vaughn heading down the stretch of the season and into the playoffs. We talked about this a number of different times. We've asked the questions a number of different times. And specifically, when we go back and look at this last loss, we wonder, well, max minutes for all the key starters, a very short bench rotation, what could have been done better? Edmund Sumner, Cam Thomas, Yuta Watanabe. Those are the main three players that come to mind when we discuss this. And certainly Cam Thomas has had some larger sample sizes out of the three, but he's also arguably, not arguably, he is the best player out of the three and the one that seems to be struggling the most. We know that there's clearly seems to be something else going on there, but we'll break down the numbers, confirm or deny what we think they should be doing when it comes to these rotations and ultimately even into the playoffs potentially. Normally, you tighten up rotations, you shorten minutes. Should the Brooklyn Nets consider going beyond those top five guys and then the Seth Currys, the Joe Harrises, and the Royce O'Neals of the world? We'll get into that. Footnote for the Brooklyn Nets, Nerlens Noel, no longer going to be with the team. 10-day contract came and went. The team will not be picking him up on a second 10-day contract. And really the question, I guess, becomes, will the Nets take any more swings in bringing in another big body? Frankly, we could even make the case extending this conversation to De'Ron Sharp. We know that he has his limitations. We know that he has struggled, obviously. We know that he picks up a lot of fouls, but so did Nerlens Noel in his very brief stint here. And if you were willing to go out to the market and take a look at a veteran player, that and I had no problem with it at the time. Doug and I said, why not? He's a guy that has a lot of experience. But if you're going to be willing to go and take a look at a player like that, then that means on the back end, unless you're going to the well another time and trying to pull another body off the streets, De'Ron Sharp should be getting a small sample size of minutes here. It just makes sense if we're talking about a team that needs to be able to spell Nicholas Claxton, needs to be able to find a way to maximize whatever value they have on their team. Let him go in, De'Ron Sharp, that is. Let him bank some bodies. Doug Norris mentioned this before. In the very, very, very small sample size, he's knocking down those perimeter shots. So you have to use the players that you have. And at this phase, whether or not I think that the Brooklyn Nets should have gone out sooner, could still go out now. Maybe they will. There's not necessarily a lot of time left here. So at some point, you just have to accept that if it's about integrating players in, figuring where they, if they can fit in, right? You have to just accept the fact that this is the roster you have. And in doing so, you need to maximize what you have. And that's why we'll talk about some of these other key players coming up. The other little housekeeping thing we wanted to do, of course, let's talk about those Phoenix Suns and where they stand in the NBA standings out there in the Western Conference, because we talked about this on yesterday's episode, just to confirm where they currently stand after losing to the Bucks. If we're going to dream a little dream, it might as well be that these Phoenix Suns continue to tumble. Three straight losses in a row now, Kings, Warriors, Bucks, obviously too. You go inside that Western Conference. We know they're the four seed, but they're just half a game up now on the Clippers and just a game and a half up on the Golden State Warriors. And then, yes, they still need a little bit of work to get done here. 2.5 games up on the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Dallas Mavericks. Ironically, the Dallas Mavericks being where Kyrie Irving is, and they're having their own struggles too. The teams where our stars went to are having some concerns. One is obviously because Kevin Durant is injured. The other because the combination has been struggling to find its way. But so that's what it looks like right now. You're 70 games through. Is that number right? Yeah. 70 games through. Oh, 69 games through for Phoenix. 70 for the LA Clippers. I'll look at the standings. 12 games to go. You're begging. You're begging the Clippers, the Warriors, and the Minnesota Timberwolves, or the Dallas Mavericks, but preferably the Minnesota Timberwolves. Let's go ahead and keep the Dallas Mavericks in some low-hanging fruit scenarios as well. You're begging them to maybe get over the top there and give the Brooklyn Nets to have a shot at a lottery pick. Obviously, the next phase of that becomes Kevin Durant has to come back. You have to be in those four bottom seeds, and then whether it's obviously 7-8 combination, you have two chances. So that means you need Phoenix to lose twice and then keep them in that lottery. So just, you know, listen, as the season winds down, we have a little bit of fun at some other teams' expenses potentially. But inside of the Brooklyn Nets organization, it does come down to what is the best way to put together a roster that is going to be successful with consistency. And we mentioned this in the last game about looking at this team and specifically this loss here, where inside of your starting lineup, you're looking at a team that played everybody outside of Dorian Finney-Smith, who played 34, 39, 38, 39, and 39 for Johnson Bridges, Claxton, and Dinwiddie, respectively. And by the way, like the numbers there for Mikal Bridges, obviously 34 points. Spencer Dinwiddie with that double-double, assists 11, 16 points. Like all the contributions from a box score standpoint are there. But as we highlighted in the post game, you go inside the bench, it's not necessarily the performances that you need from those guys. And frankly, like, you know, the 12 minutes from Joe Harris, I don't know how much more he's ever going to play. But when he's off 1-for-4 in those 12 minutes, it certainly makes it harder. Though he did actually, I will say, as a footnote, have a rebound and a couple of assists there, which anytime you get something beyond three-point shooting from a player like Joe, you feel better about it. So that being the case, let's dive in on all three of these players. Let's dive in on Yuta Watanabe, Edmund Sumner, Cam Thomas. What do the numbers tell us about where they have been up to this point? Any sample sizes that they have with the new players? Cam Thomas is going to be basically the only guy there. And where do the analytics say that they can possibly have success? And do they fit into the lineups ultimately? What are the pairings? Where do I think that you can utilize an Edmund Sumner successfully without disrupting what you've been building since you got Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, Dorian Finney-Smith, and Spencer Dinwiddie? We'll dive into all of that coming up in just a moment. But first, I'll tell you about what I told you about at the top. The ultimate pro basketball GM. If you've ever dreamed of running your own NBA franchise, as we all do, I put in a call, said it last time, put in a call to Joe Tsai, thinking about making a change. This is even pre-Sean Marks days. I said, I can rebuild this thing. I can build this team better, stronger, faster than before. Shout out Radiohead. He turned me down, but you can manage every single aspect of your team with Ultimate Pro Basketball GM, play through the season and lead your team to glory. You are responsible for hiring the right coaches, hiring the assistants, trading and training players, making draft picks, navigating your franchise through free agency and the draft, and all the ups and downs that come with an NBA season. Imagine if the model of this pro basketball GM was based on the Brooklyn Nets. You would have to deal with trade demands and requests. You'd have to deal with stars out of the lineup, in the lineup. You'd have to figure out this rotation that we're talking about right now. Are you getting enough minutes for all the key players? So I've been having a good time with it. I mentioned I'm in my fifth season, I think. I'm in the playoffs. I can't get out of the first round. I'm like the Brooklyn Nets. I can't get out of the first round. But you can, of course, Locked On with Locked On Nets listener, get a 100% free boost to your franchise when you use the promo code, all caps, Locked On. One word, Locked On, when you're in the game store. So make sure to check it out. To download, just visit probasketballgm.com, scan the code, or look it up on the app stores. That's probasketballgm.com, Ultimate Basketball GM. Start your dynasty today. Let's start our dynasty today. How are we going to get better as a Brooklyn Nets franchise? Let's do it by looking at the key players. Now, I'm going to briefly talk about Cam Thomas. This is the one that, for me, is not easy to move past quickly, but it's just we know that he can be productive when he's on the court, and we know, or we at least surmise, that something must be going on behind the scenes that's preventing him from being out there with consistency. One of the things that I was curious about, though, is where the net rating stood when we were looking back at games with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant versus where we've been with Mikal Bridges, with Cam Johnson, with this iteration of the team. You go over on StatMuse, you'll find that the Brooklyn Nets, the Cam Thomas is a 117 defensive rating. And that's not something that's going to surprise you. But when we think about the stat lines that he's been putting up, if allowed to play, which we know he hasn't been able to do anything in the recent games, I want to take a quick look here. You go back to, he's now played 20 minutes twice in the month of March. When he's not playing over 20 minutes against Minnesota, where they won, against the Knicks, where they lost, he's getting 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 7 minutes, and 7 minutes. It was just a second ago, last month, when he played double-digit minutes for the entire month. Now, the one obvious stat that we can point to is that the team did not win a lot of those games. That was a team that went 3-5-8. So 3-8. 3-8 in a month where he was 3-9. Missed the Milwaukee Bucks game there at the end. So even in games when he's been productive, like the Atlanta, Chicago, Miami, backtracking here, and then even working into, let's say, the Knicks game, those are games when he had production, 6 of 14, 6 of 15, 6 of 11 from the field, and yet the team is losing those games when he's scoring in double digits. That's the first obvious thing. Even if he's being productive, and this is what Jock Vaughn has sometimes suggested at, there's games that they've lost. Early on, before you had the trades completed and these guys were all available, saying that they lost those games is a bit of a misnomer because you didn't have a lot of people on the team when he's scoring 40-plus points. But when you go in and look at Cam Thomas, going back to the Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving era of the team, a very small sample size with all three of them on the court, which resulted in a 104 offensive rating and a 145 defensive rating. Now, Kyrie Irving's going to contribute to that as well, but it certainly starts to tell you, at least back then maybe, why there were some concerns when he was on or off the court. Now, Cam Thomas on the court by himself in those games, 112 offensive, 119 defensive when you took those stars away, and gave you a minus 7 on the net rating there. And, you know, 112, respectable, 119, not great. But again, what are the combinations there between Royce O'Neal, who was in the starting lineup? You get into the second unit. This is pre-Joe Harris being taken out of the starting lineup as well. Who is he playing with, and how is he capable of being productive in those regards? Flip the script, though. Just purely him on, off the court. And this is the case why you try to find a way to have him be on the floor for stretches here. Cam Thomas on the court. Offensive rating, 115. Defensive rating, 115. When he's off the court, 115, 114. And that's covering the entire season, 2,400 minutes plus with him on the floor, off the floor, 833 with him on. It's a big enough sample size in both areas across two very different versions of this team to suggest that, yes, even if you think that there are areas of his game that he needs to work on, it's very much possible for him to be on the floor and for the team to still be productive overall. This isn't rocket science, but it is what the numbers tell us. Incidentally, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson on the court together with no Cam Thomas, 111 offensive, 111 defensive. They're a net neutral right now, which pretty much passes the sniff test. The interesting thing for me would be the combination when all three of them are on the floor together, which, by the way, this is probably a good case for Cam Thomas to be out there on the floor with Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson in some capacity, to be a part of that starting unit. While the defensive rating was a 132, and this is only across 33 minutes, the offensive rating is 140. Like, this can be potentially otherworldly on the offensive end when you put him out there with some of these key players that are having success. If you break it up a little bit differently and say Cam and Mikal, it gets a little bit hairier. 71-minute sample size, so larger sample size, 95 offensive, and then an atrocious 125 on the defensive end. So where do these sample sizes go and what do they ultimately look like the more minutes that Cam Thomas plays? So far with Bridges and Johnson off the court, by the way, this would be the isolated minutes. There has been production from Cam Thomas. This is going to stretch well beyond into the pre-Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson era, where it's a plus 113 defensive, 115 offensive, plus 2.42 rating. What does that tell us? Because remember, we said overall with Kyrie Irving and with Kevin Durant, it wasn't successful with them on the court, and with them off the court, it was a neutral. So that means that in this iteration of the team, they can have success with Cam Thomas being the scorer inside of that second unit. There is a path for him to be successful on this team with minutes and not necessarily need to be inserted into the starting lineup. He can still find a way to have success when you combine him with some of these secondary players. And we're going to do the same thing with Edmund Sumner and a little bit with Yuta Watanabe before we ask the question of how deep should this team go into their bench. But if I went in and just said, let's go ahead and look at the players that have been inside of this bench unit right now, which would include Joe Harris, which would include Royce O'Neal, which would include a Seth Curry. If we look at those stats for Cam Thomas, all four of those players on the floor together, which would comprise much of a second unit potentially, it's a small sample and it's negative. The offensive rating isn't good enough. The defensive rating is bad. Now, if you just take out, though, for example, a Royce O'Neal, which is ironic because you like him for his defensive work, but a combination of Cam Thomas, Joe Harris, and Seth Curry in very small minutes is very positive offensively. And if we look for a big enough sample size, at which point I'd be saying like 121 minutes, it can tell you something. Cam Thomas, Royce O'Neal, Joe Harris. That could be a version of a second unit for this team as currently constructed. 126 offensive, 128 defensive. You're giving things up on the defensive end. That's not just about Cam Thomas. It's going to be about Joe Harris as well. But they can shred water is the point. There are versions of this roster where they can shred water when Cam Thomas is on the court on both ends of the floor. Most damning one might be the Cam Thomas, Royce O'Neal rating. When you take off Joe and Curry, it's 112 offensive, 116 defensive. Not good, you know, not terrible, still in the negative, but you're trying to find combinations that afford this team the ability to have success with a guy that can score for you. And it all leads back to the premise of how can this team be successful down the stretch of this season and potentially into the postseason? We know that we build out rosters when it comes to playoff basketball, shorten rotations, play a very tight bench unit. But supposedly, we haven't gotten the sample size of it, but supposedly after the trade, this team was built to be deep. This team was built to be talented down to the 9th and 10th player on the roster. And yet we don't consistently see that. What we end up consistently seeing is big minutes for your starters, as well they should be. And then Royce O'Neal has been effectively the 6th man. And after that, it's a bit of a hodgepodge. Now, they settled in to Seth Curry and into Joe Harris. But what is the argument for? Those are 8 guys. And now we've talked about Cam Thomas. You can make the case for him, but maybe a lot of much in the way that we've talked about, is Ben Simmons ever going to come back from injury? Probably not. And you can't count on him coming back, so you can't really bother to dream on what it's going to be. In some ways, and this will turn tonight, Thursday night, when they get back on the court, all of a sudden Cam Thomas will play 20-plus minutes, because that's the way it works with our podcast when we say something. But you can't dream on him being a part of it until he's consistently a part of it. And when we come up, we start talking about Yuta Watanabe and Edmund Sumner, it's the same scenario, right? We're going to dream on them being a part of it, which is difficult because they haven't been a part of it. But it's all predicated on making the case that this team can be stronger, more consistently, and can present more problems, and can keep their best players fresher if they dip a little bit deeper into the rotation. You know, Spencer Dinwiddie, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, Dorian Finney-Smith, Nick Claxton, Royce O'Neal. That's your top 6. It's clear cut, and they've shown the ability to be productive with consistency, all the way down to Royce, obviously. But if you can avoid, we used to talk about this with Kevin Durant, and I'm not comparing any one player on the Nets roster now to Kevin Durant, but we used to talk about this. If you run the guy max minutes down the stretch of the season, when it comes to playoffs, there's that risk of burnout. Now, to whatever degree we think the Nets can have success in the playoffs, that's TBD. But right now you can say, if you play, and it's only 38, 39 minutes, and these guys are significantly younger than Kevin Durant, we get that. But if you tell me that you're going to run these players, including, listen, Royce O'Neal, Dorian Finney-Smith, they're at least older, they're 30, 31. If you're going to run these guys 38, 39 minutes all the way down the remainder of this season and run a tight, short, you know, three-man bench rotation that's sometimes really two, what is it going to look like if you get into a scenario that you could have an opportunity to be a scrappy team in the playoff series against the Knicks, or you fall down and it's against the Sixers, or you end up tumbling with some difficult games down the stretch into the play-in for any reason? I want to have consistency around the players that I can reach to, and the value of going to the depth that I think I have on my roster and saying, when it's your second unit against my second unit, I believe that I have ways to be effective. I think I can win those bench minutes more often than not. And that's what helps me tread water against some of the better teams that have the superstar players. The Nets don't have a player that's better than Joel Embiid, but maybe I can win those bench minutes there for stretches. The Milwaukee Bucks are a very deep team, but maybe I can go neutral in those minutes and see if I can get over the top of them when it's Giannis against McHale and Cam Johnson and Middleton, et cetera, right? It just seems like it behooves Jock Vaughn and the Brooklyn Nets to maximize the value of players that they have available. And with that, let's take a look at Yuta Watanabe and Edmund Sumner and make a very strong case why, at a minimum, maybe Edmund Sumner needs to be a more significant part of this team down the stretch. Before we do that, though, you know what we've got to do? Oh, we've got to talk to you about Built Bar. And we got to talk to you about Built Bar March Madness. You know that the NCAA has their March Madness going on right now. So does Built Bar. The March Madness bracket is here, and we know that you have your favorite bar or puff, and now is your time to make it count. You go to BuiltBarMadness.com to vote for your favorites. You know that you'll be voting for, the peanut butter brownie. I may go with that one. Coconut puff is an absolute one that I'm big on it. I think I don't know if coconut is something that you consider to be a sleeper or a Cinderella story when it comes to March Madness. In my book, it's a number one seed. But when you do this, you vote for your favorite bar or puff, you will be entered into a drawing where 50 lucky Locked On listeners will get a free box of Built. Not only that, but Locked On will also win a Locked On Fan will also win a 12-month subscription to Built to have Built's best bars or puffs delivered monthly straight to your door. You got to try Built. Built is the best protein bar ever. Seriously, you don't even have to joke about it. This is a serious conversation. They're the best Built bar ever. They're amazing, and you won't even believe that they're good for you. What makes Built Bar and Puffs so good? For starters, we know they're high in protein, they're low in sugar, and they're covered in 100% real chocolate. That's right, 100% real chocolate, and none of those nasty additives that you're going to get with a candy bar. You run over to BuiltMarchMadness.com right now to vote for your favorite bar or puff and pick up a box while you're there. You can vote every day in March, so hop on and support your pick. Okay, the other two players that we want to talk about are Edmund Sumner and Yuta Watanabe and why this team should run deeper. When we get over into, again, the analytics of it all, which I'm sure, I hope everyone enjoys, because I think these numbers can be telling, especially when it comes to combinations. Like, if we're going to live in the era where the eye test should mean a heck of a lot and should mean more than maybe it's been diminished by, analytics need to have their role inside of the decision-making of the Brooklyn Nets and where they want to go to from here. Edmund Sumner on-court, off-court numbers. Over 2,600 minutes with him off the court. Over 680 minutes with him on the court. Just in that sample alone, when he's on the court, team is a net 3.18. 114.9 offensive, 111 defensive. And he's neutral, by the way. On the nose, the team is neutral on the nose when he's off the court. So the case can be made that he has a role here. What should the role be? One of the interesting things that we were talking about with the way Spencer Dinwiddie has evolved himself, especially in recent games, three straight games with double-digit assists, right? Doug mentioned it, averaging now 8 assists per game with the Brooklyn Nets, averaging 9.5 assists per game in the month of March. But as you do a couple of things, The first of which, think about getting into the second unit and how it could be more productive, and even playing alongside sometimes Spencer Dinwiddie. The Royce O'Neal, Joe Harris, Seth Curry, Edmund Sumner unit to talk about what the back end could be, there's no point. The sample size wasn't even big enough. The Royce O'Neal, Edmund Sumner combination, this is one that we liked. Plus 13 net rating, 116.98 on offense, and a 103 defensive rating. One of the things I think we forget about with Edmund Sumner is that he is long. He's slight of frame. He's going to struggle against some of the bigger switching matchups, but he is arguably, now after Spencer Dinwiddie, right? He's your most viable backcourt contributor to be coming in off the bench for you and be able to hold his own. So if you're thinking about Seth Curry, we're thinking about Cam Thomas. Yeah, you can make a case why it's going to be a problem on the defensive end, and that's the identity the Brooklyn Nets are going with. Edmund Sumner more than holds his own in those cases. Let's also talk about another version of the bench unit for the Brooklyn Nets, potentially. Royce O'Neal, Joe Harris, and Edmund Sumner. A collective plus 7.2. 117 offensive, 109 defensive across 154 minutes. The reason why Edmund Sumner might be the strongest case to play is because, unlike Yuta Watanabe, who we'll touch on his numbers, but I just... if I'm being sadly honest, I don't think that Yuta Watanabe is going to get the sniff he deserves. And the case for that is that the players that were brought in are long, they're lean, they're defensive-minded, and they can shoot from the perimeter, right? So you can understand how the role for Yuta has been diminished. What you can't understand is the way that the role for Edmund Sumner has been taken away. Because you still lack the backcourt playmakers that you want to have on this team. He's good enough to be on ball. He is a downhill attacking player that'll get at the basket. Now, we can argue whether or not his finishing has been good enough in that role, because we've seen him, as Doug would say, he just plays almost too fast for basketball. A lot of times he beats the man to the basket, and he's going so fast that the bank off glass is just too damn strong, and he can't get that ball to go down. But I am just so hard-pressed. When you think about the rotations of this team, and we say our starting five is Dinwiddie, Bridges, Johnson, Finney-Smith, Claxton. Okay. But now you get into the second unit, and the idea that you can't find a world where your go-between actually, and this is kind of the point here, that your flex go-between can be, if you want to bring in Seth Curry Joe Harris when Bridges comes off, however you want to work these, if you're going to bring in Seth Curry for Spencer Dinwiddie, once you move from Bridges to Harris, or once you're ready to then have a little bit of a different sample size before you get back to your starting unit, Edmund Sumner is the guy that has a little bit of length, has defensive value to pair either side of it. You want to tell me you put the ball in his hand in the second unit for stretches? Or by the way, in the second unit where Royce O'Neal is already doing some pseudo point guard ball handling. So this isn't the sample size to say that Edmund Sumner can be your point guard in the second unit. No. But frankly, nobody can be the point guard in the second unit. They don't have a point guard for the second unit. You can argue that Cam Thomas could be, but again, they're not going to play him. So in this second unit, why not have the opportunity for Cam Johnson, who can do a bit of ball handling for you too? Royce O'Neal's been doing some ball handling for you. Seth Curry can do some ball handling for you, but you'd rather him be off ball, even in the second unit. And that's, I think, actually an area where they could be more successful, is keep Seth Curry more in the role that you want him, as opposed to forcing him to do something that I think he not struggles with, but is less ideal. It's taking him out of what his comfort zone is. Same thing for Joe Harris in the second unit. Now, he's been good. When they brought him in and mixed and matched him with the starting players as well, we've seen be a spot-up shooter, small sample size, 12, 15 minutes a game. If they go down, they go down. If they don't, they don't. That's exactly what you want him to be doing. In a lot of ways, reflecting back on even the star era of this team this season, they should have been asking him only to do that and stop asking him to do so many of the other little areas of the game that just expose the weaknesses in his game. But I can tell you that Edmund Sumner is deserving of 10 to 15 minutes a game. 10 to 15 minutes a game. Use this last one as the sample size. In this last game where they fall 121-107, and this isn't going to be the case where I say that Edmund Sumner could have been the reason you won this game. Don't worry. But when you go back and look at this game and you think about the fact that you had 34, 39, 38, 39, and 39 on the starting unit, and you know the guys. Royce O'Neal played 17. Joe Harris played 12. Curry played 19. Thomas played 3. Whatever your intention was, Cam Thomas was the first guy off the bench in this game. You might as well not have bothered. Because I don't know what your mindset could have been that 3 minutes was more than enough of a sample size to then not have him play the rest of the night. So let's assume those 3 minutes are off the board. They're available for someone to occupy. Let's also assume that Joe Harris plays 12 minutes in this game. Doesn't look fantastic, 1 of 4 from the field. So if halfway through his minutes on the night, or if you just mix and match it and say, we're going to run 4 minutes with Joe, and then we're going to look to Sumner and see if he can give us a burst for 3 or 4 minutes here. Cut down Joe Harris minutes in a given game like this. Royce O'Neal minutes are going to stay where they are, as they should. This was a productive game for Seth Curry, 3 of 6 from the field, 19 minutes. But even just in doing that, if you tell me that Seth Curry is going to be a 15 to 20 minute player, so there could be 4 minutes inside of this game to play with, that Cam Thomas is or is not going to play, I don't know. But there's a few minutes there, and then Joe Harris as well. Like, there is enough here, and then you pull away a minute from each one of your other four starters outside of Dorian Finney-Smith, or even the case, as we said before, with these minute breakdowns, go ahead and pull Dorian Finney-Smith down to 32. I can manufacture and construct another 15 to 20 minutes that doesn't diminish the starting unit, that keeps them a little bit more fresh, and provides you with another option on this bench to come in and continue to be an attacking offensive unit, continue to be a player that can do some facilitating for you, and hopefully help create a little bit of balance. Because one of the things that you'd like to, I think, do is maybe use some of the length. And we've seen a little bit of this with Cam Johnson, flexing him into the second unit, separating him from Mikal Bridges at times. Well, again, Edmund Sumner can be a player there in that second unit that has value. And unfortunately, we're not going to get to Yuta Watanabe in the way that I wanted to. Well, maybe we'll talk about him the next off day. Because he has length. And he at least has defensive consistency. He is not a Dorian Finney-Smith. He is not a Royce O'Neal. But we know what he has been able to do. He's been a far better defender, perimeter, outside defensive player than Joe Harris had been over the course of his career. Let's put it that way. He's also been a consistent three-point shooter. He's deserving of having minutes as well. I don't know whether or not, when we come down the stretch of this season into the playoffs, that playing more Edmund Sumner, playing more Yuta Watanabe, playing more Cam Thomas is going to change ultimately what the results are. But it feels like a disservice to not look at some of these players, what they've done for you this year, and say, no, your value can't be there. Because these are players that had value when you had Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. They were playing when you had Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. So how you go from two superstar team and players that have roles to now having no role, it is a little bit confusing. And we understand all of their jobs get easier. But Joe Harris is the example. If he didn't have a role, if he had a starting role with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and still has a 15-minute role with this team now, we know it's veterans versus maybe younger players. We know it's guys that have been here versus guys that have come in this season. I get it. But a big case can be made, as we said over the last handful of episodes, Sumner, Watanabe, they potentially could have a role with this team beyond this season. Doesn't look like it. Cam Thomas, role with this team beyond this season. Doesn't look like it. Joe Harris could very well be gone. Seth Curry could very well be gone. Looks like maybe Royce O'Neal will stick around, but he could be gone. So you're spending time running players that may or may not be a part of this team in the long term. And specifically when it comes to Curry, Harris, it just feels like you're being short-sighted with what could be productive. All right, that's my rant ahead of the game tonight. The Brooklyn Nets are going to look to get themselves back on track. You know that Doug and I will be in on the post game following the game against the Sacramento Kings. We'll be here. You can go ahead and turn on your alerts over on YouTube where you'll know when we're going live over there. You get the podcast feed. And as Doug always says, if you're not on YouTube for these post-game lives, you're missing out on the post-podcast podcast and some of the bonus content that we like to do. So be sure to subscribe, to download, to leave the glowing review. And as Doug would say, I would say the quote of the day, there isn't one. Why? because Doug Norrie isn't here. And all I say is that I miss my friend. And I can't wait until he's back here again so we can keep talking all things Brooklyn Nets basketball.